Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to the Game on Sunday podcast. Michael Lester here with you. Glad you could join us. And as usual, I'm joined by Tomás Mackay and by Martin Carney. And we're going to look again, as we do at this time of the year, forward and backwards, I suppose, to the games last weekend, which was mostly Allianz Football League. And of course, the hurling is coming up next weekend. And other big games as well in football. So let's kind of reflect, first of all, Martin Carney, on what happened last weekend. A lot of interesting matches, of course. Now, I suppose from my own personal point of view, I was watching the Galway-Tyrone match, which was up in Omagh, and Galway squeaked out a victory out of that one. Wasn't a great game of football, Martin. But having said that, Galway won, you know.
Galway won, Michael, and deservedly so. No, I'd agree with you. It wasn't a great game of football. But I think Galway were afforded the ultimate accolade afterwards by Brian Duher, the Tyrone manager, when he said that simply Galway wanted it more than Tyrone. Now, for that to happen up in Omagh, for a Galway team or any visiting team to be seen to want the game and to be more aggressive and to be more kind of up for it than the home team, that's most unusual. And, you know, Galway have quite a number of injuries at the moment, Michael. I think as many as 10 or 11 players are out, 4 teamers are out.
Yes.
Certainly in the forward.
I think, Martin, Galway were listening to this podcast 2 or 3 weeks ago when you cut them to pieces and said they had no open. They'd no lay road there.
I think Fallon might have been Galway men. maybe they're spies. But anyway, what impressed me about Galway, they played fairly direct in the early couple of minutes. And Rob Finnerty actually got 2 wonderful points, I think, from play. You know, it's lovely to see a high ball going in, a guy out fielding his marker and kicking it over the bar. Now, he may have kind of quietened down after that, but I thought Matthew Tierney and Johnny Heaney in particular really impressed throughout the game. And then, young Sweeney, when he got the goal at the vital stage, but in many respects, it was Sean Kelly coming on, I think, after about maybe 49, maybe for the last 20 minutes or so, I thought he made a huge difference with his running power. But Brian Duher will be concerned at the lack of fight and the lack of application with his team at the weekend. And like on Saturday, I think they're playing Mayo in Omagh again. And he'd need to get a hell of a sight more out of his starting 15 next weekend than was the case. Because like 12 points was a poor return for them. Defensively, I thought, again, the way that Galway got through for the goal was un-Tyrone-like, to be honest about it. And Galway deservedly got the 2 points. And they'd be looking to probably get about 7 to just keep themselves safe in the league. And certainly they went a good way down the road the last day of getting those 2.
Interesting you should mention the Tyrone-Mayo match, which is coming up at the weekend, of course. That's a real swinger of a match, because win it, you're in happy place. Lose it, and you're in a bit of bother.
Well, this is the thing, Michael. I think as we stand at the moment, like Tyrone are in 2 points. Like, I mean, they will want to win this home game. And Mayo are comfortable enough in that, okay, they're on 4. Now, if they win this, as you say, they have 6 and they're in a good place, basically. And likewise, if Tyrone lose, they're in a bit of trouble. I know at the moment Monaghan and Roscommon are below them, but Mayo will be quite confident about going to Tyrone at the weekend. Like, their visit to Killarney last weekend, I thought, and they were most unlucky. not to get a draw out of the game. And, you know, there was something very similar to the very last play of that game at the weekend against Kerry, as there was the previous weekend against Dublin, insofar as Mayo had a free kick out on the right-hand side against Dublin. As far as I can recall, Ryan O'Donoghue found Fergal Boland, who got a point. The last day, Rory Brickington made a mark, needed to play the game short, needed to hold on to possession, went for the score, handed possession back to Kerry, and of course, the inevitable happened. David Clifford got on the end of the move and shot a very, very good point, a very good winning point at that. But Mayo, nonetheless, I thought, played well throughout, and they will go up to Tyrone at the weekend in a very confident mood.
One team that we, one county we have to mention here in terms of this league process so far, because there was so much about this going into it. I'm talking about Derry. I'm talking about Mickey Hart. A lot of, I suppose, controversy, debate, whatever you want to call it. But stats are stats. Derry are top of Division 1. 3 out of 3. McKenna Cup winners. You know, now, that doesn't necessarily mean everything come next June or July. But you would have to say, Martin, Mickey Hart clearly has been making an impact.
Yeah, I think this is his eighth win in a row. Like if you factor in the actual McKenna Cup games as well, and like they're playing with huge confidence and they're playing with a full squad or a full, you know, they're recognised starting 15 every weekend. Like what I mean by that is that, you know, the likes of Conor Glass, who I thought might have got a break after the Waddy Graham's All Ireland final win, he has played every game. Two of his colleagues equally have played in all of the games so far. But like throughout the field, like they're just playing with a lot of confidence. And there's no doubt about it. They shall we say, the clamour, the venom that came from a number of quarters when Mickey Hart was appointed Derry manager, that has abated somewhat now, Michael. And there's no doubt about it, winning covers up everything, and winning actually kind of, shall we say, sets the agenda. And the fact that they're winning regularly now is actually kind of, I think he's winning the Derry public over to him. And okay, next weekend they're away to Galway and Salt Hill. Win that one, Michael, and they're basically in the all. You know, they're on the road to probably the National League final. But they're going well at the moment, playing confident football, and the Mickey Hart's mark, so to speak, is all over the team.
I have to say, so far, and we're still talking early days, but I suppose I'm not surprised. To know Mickey, you know, this is great.
That's the thing. But of all the appointees this year, Michael, he's the one that most pressure was on. I know Jim McGuinness was coming back for the second time with Donegal, and, you know, he was coming back to his native county and all of that. But Mickey was going in, it was like a Liverpool manager going to manage Manchester United. It doesn't happen. And for a Tyrone man to go in and manage Derry, that stuck in the craw of an awful lot of Derry people. But as I said, he has developed the winning habit. Players seem to be playing for him and enjoying the, shall we say, his approach to the game. And he's certainly, like, they have a difficult championship, Michael, ahead of them. A very difficult championship. I think they play in the first round. They play Donegal. They're on the same side of the draw then as Tyrone, Monaghan and Monaghan. And it's going to be, even if he beats Donegal, then I think then the fun would really start, because it's quite likely they'll meet Tyrone in the second round. But Michael, could I just mention that? I've been talking Tyrone, I've been talking Derry. But if you look at the Ulster teams in general in the National League, like there's no Ulster team in Division 4. There's one of them leading Division 3, that's Down. There's four of them in the top four places in Division 2 in order. That's Armagh, Donegal, Cavan and Fermanagh. And again, the two teams in Division 1, Derry and Tyrone. Okay, Tyrone maybe had a setback last weekend, but all of the Ulster teams are actually faring very, very well in the league so far.
Yes, they are. There's no question about that. I want to have a look at Division 2 and a particular issue here. And Tomás Mulcahy, I want to bring you in on this, because this isn't just about football or hurling or whatever. This is about a problem. I'm talking about Kildare here. Okay? They're bottom of Division 2. Three games, no wins. That's not the particular point. The point is there was something, this has been said like in the media over the last couple of weeks, there was something wrong in Kildare. I don't know what it is, but clearly there's an issue.
Yeah, but I suppose, like, if people are reporting it, Michael, what are they reporting? What are they saying is the issue there? Is it lack of interest by players? Is there an issue with players in the board? Is there issues?
But interesting, Tomás, sorry to go across, you know, but that's an interesting thing that you mentioned, because there was a set to outside the dressing room last weekend after the Kildare Armagh match between reporters and Glenn Ryan, who's the manager, and we've had Glenn on this podcast.
We have had Glenn on the podcast, yeah.
And there was a big issue because Glenn more or less suggested that some of his comments were misquoted. The media challenged that. I'm talking here about some of the things that County Board Chairman in Kildare said and so forth. So I don't want to get into, like, you know, the who said what to whom kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it is obvious, Martin, to me, that there's some issue going on.
Yeah, there's some issue. There's no doubt about it. And like the Chairman McGorman, what he said at the county board meeting, it was reported by the Leinster Leader. Glenn Ryan, the last day outside the dressing room, got into a set-to with one of the journalists from that paper. The journalist offered him the tape of the particular meeting. Glenn refused to take it. But I think it's wider than this, Michael. If you look at Kildare in a way, like over the last 10, 15 years, like Kieran McGeaney managed them for 7 or 8 years. And Keane O'Neill, who's involved with, Galway at the moment, You had Jack O'Connor was their last manager. And now you have Glenn Ryan. But I was just looking at it, Michael, from a what I call the league point of view. They have yo-yoed between Division 2 and Division 1 since 2017. Like, they lost the Division 2 semi-final, or the Division 2 final to Galway in 2017, but got promoted. But the following year then, in Division 1, they lost every single one of their games and got relegated again. And this has been going on all the time. Like, they got promoted in 2021, but got relegated in 2022. And they have been there since. And their win-loss, shall we say, record is not particularly encouraging. So what's happening at the moment in Kildare football, the seeds of it have been building up over the last number of years. And, like, I mean, even in the last year's championship, fair enough, they beat Wicklow. They, I think, lost narrowly to Dublin, but they drew with Sligo. But I know Dublin destroyed them again later on in the championship. But they just don't seem to. From watching the game last Sunday and watching it carefully, Michael, I didn't think they were in the same parish at all as Armagh when it came to fitness or athleticism or movement. I didn't think their skill levels, if you look at the first goal in particular, it was as a consequence of an unforced error on the part of a Kildare player. They didn't have the same tenacity in fighting for 50-50 balls as Armagh. So there is something not kind of happening there at the moment. There's something not gelling properly. But Michael, it helps nothing when you have a chairman, when you have a manager, all of the kind of, shall we say, the warts being exposed in public. This is when things are going badly. That's when you need a united face, so as to kind of, in a sense, work on the thing behind the scene rather than have all of your, shall we say, ills and all of your problems put out in the public eye, which is the case in Kildare at the moment. And the pressure it puts on Glenn Ryan is considerable and way above what it should be.
And all, but as we said, like, there's nothing entirely new about this, because Kildare is a big county in population-wise.
Yeah.
It's a great, great football county. There is so much potential there. Always has been. I'm going back, Martin, and you remember this, to 1998, the All-Ireland final.
That's right.
There, and
that's right.
The Feckers should have won that. I mean, I'm glad they didn't. But, you know.
But seriously, but you're right, Michael. And it has, it's something, like, for example, the last time we got something really prominent about Kildare is when they kind of had their Newbridge or Nowhere thing with Mayo. I think it was in 2018. That's the last time that I remember Kildare being really up there, prominent. And you know something, Michael, that particular year, and Tomás, they lost the first round game in the championship that year to Carlo. So, I mean, there's a massive inconsistency with them. And for a team or for a county with such a big population, with so many prominent players and quality players, and even if you take the manager, the likes of Anthony Rainbow, the likes of Glenn Ryan, superb players in their time, but they're not getting the tune from the senior team that they should be. The team aren't responding to the promptings of the management. And as you say, the last few years, they win an All-Ireland under-21 or under-20 or certainly contested the latter stages of that. So we should be seeing more from them. That is the case. But the bottom line I have about it, Michael, Glenn Ryan and Kildare's cause isn't being helped by the fact that their troubles are being aired in public to the extent that's happening at the moment. It's not fair to anybody, and it's not going to advance the cause of Kildare football one iota.
But the fact, Martin, though, is that reporters are outside dressing rooms are fishing for information. Obviously, they're smelling something is not right there. They're smelling there's issues, and
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Like, why aren't they being addressed in terms of, like, you mentioned the team is not fit. It doesn't seem to be fit training-wise and stuff like that. Is that an issue? Is it players versus management, do you think? Or is it players being bored? Or
it could well be. We've seen over the years those type of issues happening in different counties. You take even down here in Mayo, you had the famous issue a number of years ago. Go back to into the 1990s when I remember there was a revolt against Brian McDonald, who was the then manager by the team, and Brian McDonald had to step aside. You had the situation a number of years back with some of the current players, that when Pat Holmes and Noel Kennelly were manager, and incidentally at the time Mike Kennelly, Noel's brother, was chairman, but the players in a sense they had some issue with management there, had a meeting and asked for their removal, and this happened. But it creates, honestly, I've seen it myself with my two eyes, Tomás, how the hurt that this leaves for a lifetime afterwards.
I agree with you. Look, and Martin, I go back to the strikes that happened here in Cork over the years as well, and I still know for a fact there's people in my club will never go see a Cork match live again because of what happened. Oh, yeah, yes, still there. And that's many years ago. Yeah, we'll not go to Cork again.
I know people in Mayo who will not go to Mayo games as long as some of the guys who were involved in that push are still playing the game. And it's so sad because every one of them are interested in the furtherance of Mayo football. But whatever clash happens or whatever breakdown in communication happened, no one will ever know the real truth of it. It just has created it created a huge kind of problem at the time. But as you said, Tomás, this lasts a lifetime. It's just
sometimes it does, Tomás. I'm kind of half smiling to myself about what you've been saying, Martin and Tomás, and it's true about the passion of GAA fans and being disappointed in results and whatever.
Yeah.
It takes me back to 19, Martin, 1983, when Galway lost the All-Ireland final to Dublin. By the way, I'm not bitter about any results, but Dublin did not win the match.
I am, Michael, because I lost my first hurling final to Kilkenny that year as well. Like,
so, I remember calling my father, a passionate GA man, played a bit for Galway himself, in fact, declaring after the match he was so disgusted with Galway. And things happened in the match and fellas got sent off and stupid things and all that kind of stuff. But he banged the table at home and said he was never going to go to Galway match again. And that was it.
And he never did he?
3 weeks later, I think, was the first round of the league and he was at the match in June, wasn't he, Ray?
That's good. That's good, Mike.
Nobody convinced him fairly well, Michael.
If you're a fan, you're a fan. Come here, lads. Before we move on any further, I just want to bring this in, just in case I forget it. But I just want to mention a couple of things. First of all, to pay our respects here on the podcast to Shane O'Hanlon of Dublin, Dublin selector, Dublin backroom man, if you like. Such an important part of what they achieved over the last number of years and so much, as I said, a part of all that. And Martin passed away there recently, and a big shock, I think, to everybody in Dublin and indeed GAA. So we pay our respects.
Very much so, Michael. I mean, he was one of these people. He was a selector under Desi. He was, a selector under Jim Gavin before that. I gather he was in Spain. He was scouting, a training camp venue for the team. And he's one of those really nameless people that's in the background that does so much work with every county team. You never see his name up on lights or anything, but he's the guy who's kind of looking after kids, who's kind of getting pitches prepared and all of that kind of thing. And you knew the sense of loss in the tone of Desi's voice after the game the other day. He was extremely passionate. He was on the verge of breaking, actually. And, it meant an awful lot. Obviously, Shane O'Hanlon meant an awful lot to a huge number of people. And they're struggling. They're struggling hugely to come to terms with that at the moment. And basically, those kind of people who are all the time around, who are everybody's friend, who all make life bearable for you when you're part of a setup, they're few and far between. But when you get a good one, as Shane O'Hanlon was, his loss is all the more, keenly felt.
Yeah, I could say that you just mentioned in terms of like he being a selector with Jim Gavin and there with Desi and stuff like that as well. It just shows like the character of the man and the quality, because when you finish and you've had the success that they had under Jim Gavin, normally there's a clean sweep and everybody moves on. But to bring this guy forward, obviously he has the respect of everybody in terms of the players, more importantly, and probably they're saying, yeah, we want this guy on board, we're sticking going forward. So he'd be a fantastic man, didn't know him, but what I've read about him, yeah, certainly a great guy.
Well, our respects, obviously, to his family and to everybody in WPA. Well, I have you there, Tom. Fitzgibbon Cup.
Yeah.
Great competition.
Yeah, it was interesting. And look, a lot has been made of the Fitzgibbon Cup and the Sigerson over the last couple of weeks, because there were matches that were taking place on a Wednesday night and a Thursday night and again on a Saturday. And we mentioned about Garrod O'Connor, I think, last week, in terms of 9 matches in 35 days. This was 10 matches within 38 days or 39 days. But Jamie Wall, the manager of Mary Eye, he's a great record with the Fitzgibbon. He was very strong afterwards coming out and saying, oh, what a fantastic competition. And it is for college students. It's up there with some of the best, and the same as the Sigerson. Just kind of, I watched a bit of it on Saturday on TG Carr, and to see the venue was Abbey Darnley. And look, I've been down there with my own club in the club match and stuff like that in the middle of summer. It's a fantastic venue. But some of the pictures I've seen on television, Michael, I was saying if the Plough Championships were going ahead on that field last Saturday, they would have been cancelled. And And I just look for a prestigious competition. And a lot of people have said it to me, why was it taken to Abu Dhani, number one? Why was there no other venue around Limerick available? Why didn't they go to Turles? Because it is a fantastic competition. But then again, I suppose, look, you've reasons for that. And I'm sure, Martin, you were so saying something similar in terms of the Sigerson as well, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I must say, the Sigerson final the previous, or last Wednesday, between UCD and University of Ulster was a joy to watch. Now, it was held in Tralee. Again, I suppose, you know, the venues are prearranged earlier in the year. But nonetheless, I thought maybe an exception could have been made to actually, you know, bring the game maybe to Drogheda or to Dundalk or someplace like that, a halfway house for both sets. You know, that would be a much more kind of convenient to both sets of teams. But just from a footballing point of view, in that particular game, I just thought the display of the two Canavan brothers, Rory and Darragh in particular, was a joy to watch, actually, throughout the game. I mean, if there was ever a kind of a guy who's cut from the old block, it's Darragh. He's so like his father in style and in temperament. And again, on the other side, it would be remiss not to mention Darragh Craig's display for UCD. I thought, like, he got 6 or 7 points from play and was most unlucky to be on a losing team. But just the quality of the game was, you know, as high as you could wish to get. But again, it just kind of, it made it, it was a very strange one to play it in Tralee, where actually 72 hours later, Mayo went and played Kerry. And again, you're talking about the Ploughing Championships. I'm not casting aspersions on Tralee, but after the conditions that played it in on the Wednesday night, shall we say the pitch suffered somewhat. And I'd like to just compliment the Sigerson competition and how beneficial it is to the development of players, certainly in a footballing sense.
Yeah, look, I'm like, just in terms of the pitch in Abu Dhani, as I said, I was there 2 or 3 years back, and it was in fantastic condition. Look, it's very difficult in early February to have a club pitch right if it isn't being actively worked over a period of time, and a lot of machinery and plant can't get into pitches at the moment because of the weather that we've had and the rain and all of that as well, right? So that's why I'm kind of saying venue wise it could have been better. But Jamie Wall, what a man, with Mary Eye. I mean, fantastic achievement, because you couldn't back UL. They were backed off the board as raging hot favourites. Now maybe bringing them to Abu Dhani didn't help UL, and it suited Mary Eye. But it was a fantastic achievement, a great win for them again, you know, and some great players there and some very promising upcoming stars in terms of Limerick and stuff like that as well, you know, with Gil Ansberger on goal and Shane O'Brien as a forward, you know, so some talented individuals there.
There's no question about that. And in fairness to the people of Abu Dhani, Abu's place during the summertime, I have to say, it really is one of the best beaches in Ireland down there. That's not good in February, by the way. But anyway, let's talk hurling, Tomás.
Yeah.
A couple of big games coming up with the weekend, of course, both and in football as well, Barton. But the one that jumps out, of course, for me is Cork and Waterford.
Yeah, look, it's probably a bigger one for Cork, Michael, in terms of where we're at, in terms of the defeats that we've had. And it's one that kind of the Cork public will obviously be looking at, maybe team selection, but more importantly, getting a result. You know, it's home advantage. Against the Waterford team, just not very narrowly against Clare, and kind of going through some of the reports all week about Waterford and the amount of players that they're missing is frightening in terms of injuries. And we've mentioned that a couple of times in terms of that's a concern, the amount of work that's being put in and the injuries that people are picking up, and I suppose a little time to recover. But I think this I said it last week that Cork Kilkenny match was a must-win game from Cork. This one has to be a win game for themselves as a team, as a management, you know. You can say we were close enough to it against Kilkenny, great bites in the second half. But, I mean, I'd kind of said last week we could have been 12 points down at halftime and there would have been no return. This time around, it has to be different. Cork has got a short performance for themselves. Yeah, they're all training hard. Guys are finished with colleges, few injuries there. But you're getting closer to March. You're getting closer to April when championship is just around the corner. Right. Like that, and that is the big thing, really. You know?
Yeah, it certainly is. And looking at there, for example, you know, top of the table. No, okay, these things are a bit tight. Like, I mean, when you say top of the table, they're a point ahead of Kilkenny, and you know, it's not exactly a victory lap, but they're up against Wexford in Wexford the next day. So,
yeah, it's going to be a tough match. But look, Ray Lone, to be fair to the man, right, he's got him playing with a style. He's got him playing with a togetherness, right. He's got the clear spirit back, right, in terms of their performance levels, the effort, the commitment. And you need that in National League matches. You need guys really, really committed to the cause. You know, it's not the kind of time for the fancy horror waiting for a free puck. You're going to get it tough, and you're going to get a very tough down on Wexford Park, Michael, as well. I mean, I've been down there years in National League matches at this time of the year, and I'm saying to myself, Jesus, could I ever get out of there? Or, you know, you're marketing for like Jerkfush or fella like that. And there are times you maybe say, here you are, look, do you want the ball? Here you can have it, right? Because it could be bucketing down, it could be, and it's tough conditions. And this time of the year, it is very, very tough for hurling as well. You know, so I think Keith Rossiter with Wexford will be happy with the progress he's making. Brian Lowen certainly will be happy with the progress. And I think he's more happy with it in terms of he's missing three or four of the star quality players as well. But it's given other guys the opportunity, and other guys are putting up their hand to say we want to be part of the championship when it comes to Munster campaign in the next couple of weeks.
And I suppose looking tomorrow at Division 1B, it's almost like a two-tier set up in the sense that at the top of the division you have Limerick, Tipp and Galway.
Yes.
And then you have, now when I say then, you have Galway and Dublin are on similar points, 2 points and that, and then Antrim and Westmeath, I suppose, not unexpectedly down the bottom.
Yeah, and look, that was always going to be the case, Michael. And next weekend you've tipped playing Westmeath, Tipp with home advantage again. Liam Cal, I think, would be delighted the way Tipp have gone. Tipp have been very, very strong year to date. Some exciting talent there. And as we mentioned previously, he's given a lot of youngsters their opportunity as well to stake their claim. And you'd expect Tipp to be beating Westmeath pretty comfortably in Turles in that one on Saturday. You mentioned Antrim v Galway. Look, Antrim narrowly lost to Dublin the last time. You'd be expecting Henry Shefflin will be taking a strong enough Galway team to go to Antrim and win above there. I think it would be important for themselves as well, just to get these matches under their belt. And if they need to pull back a little bit as championship gets closer, they can do so because they'll have the points in the bag, you know. And it'll be interesting to see Micheál Donoghue, though, with Dublin and against Limerick in Parnell Park as well, because I think it's important. It's an important one for him. Just got out of jail the last time against Antrim, and I think he needs like to pull a big scalp, certainly, you know, and they were beaten by Tipperary the first day there. So this, what kind of Limerick team will they put out? They're probably looking at a championship down the road. Maybe the league might be as important to Limerick this time around, but you always find out the Parnell Park is going to be a very, very difficult game, but you probably would expect Limerick to come out on top in that one as well.
This will be at the weekend, game 3 in the divisions and in hurling, and it's kind of, you know, it's crossroads time, Tomás, in the sense that, you know, you win a game at the weekend, you look pretty good. You lose it, and it's a different story.
It's a different story, you see, right? And like you take, we'd say. We take for argument the Cork team and stuff like that. If they were to lose against Waterford, it puts serious doubts in management's head, put serious doubt in players' head. Do you go again the next time, and do you change 5 or 6 players? Where do you build your consistency? Where do you build the continuity? Where do you build the team ethos, the team spirit, if you keep chopping and changing your team? And It's like you need to be winning two or three of your league matches. So that's why I'm expecting, like, you know, the Waterford Cork to hopefully come out on top in that one. And then you have another fascinating one is Kilkenny Offaly. Also, a lot is made in terms of Kilkenny and rebuilding. Jeez, I was very impressed with them against Cork the last night. I mean, they were outstanding in the first half period. And they drew against Wexford in Nolan Park, and I'm sure they'd have been disappointed with that one. And now they play their great rivals as well, Offaly, on Sunday. So that's an interesting one as well. And also, just in terms of hurling, like, some fascinating thing there. I was just reading in terms of what's coming out. What has already come out is in terms of the Yellow Slitter. From the 1st of January 2024, the Yellow Slitter is now compulsory for minor right up to senior, you know, but this applies to club as well. And it's kind of a fascinating team in terms of, you know, guys that would have had stock of white slitters locked up in premises and stuff like that as well, right? They now only can use them for training purposes, for league games or for championship. It is all about the Yellow Slitter. And I kind of say, Martin, maybe we'll see a yellow football at some stage, maybe.
Don't worry. I saw Mr. John Prenti this year in a championship game, in the club championship game before Christmas. I saw him with two yellow balls out of the boot of the car one night. There was an awful fog in Castle Bar.
So I want to get yellow balls.
The yellow balls have been around in football long before you had your yellow slippers.
It's a fluorescent yellow high-vis match litter, right? But the funny thing about it, Michael, is what I'm looking at, right? This is based on clear scientific evidence as well, right? You know, a swatch card is used to establish, you know, the level of compliance with a slitter. So I was asking somebody recently that was saying, look, they supply slitters, but for them to compete with something like this would probably nearly cost them 15 or 16 euro a ball. Now, you take how many slitters have been lost in training sessions, match day situations, right? I just wonder where the hell this is going to end up, because there's going to be a massive, massive cost in this to actually be compliant. There's only three suppliers out there, seemingly our suppliers that are actually compliant on this at the moment. And the swatch card, I don't know. I don't have any swatch card anywhere to check my balls when I bring the Glen.
And by the way, Moss, we're actually glad you don't. Thank you.
Oh, so I don't know where it's all going to end up.
Yeah, no, right, Michael, quickly.
Right and right, yeah. If it's any consolation to hurlers and football, they use a white ball or a yellow ball or whatever, or to get footballers. I was watching Rally Sweden, Round of the World Rally Championship recently, and there was a couple of night stages in it. And needless to say, in Sweden, it's snowing heavily this time of the year and that. And the number of drivers were complaining at the end of stages that they had to turn their headlights off because they couldn't see the corners because of the reflection of the snow and all that kind of stuff. So, you know what? It applies in every sport. You get the problems. Maybe they should get a swatch watch or something too. Listen, lads, good to talk to you. Thank you for your time. Enjoy that. Let's see how the weekend goes. As I said, a lot of big matches. I'd be down in Salt Hill by myself for the Galway Derry match, and we'll see how it all pans out.
Enjoy it and behave yourself.
I'll do my best. Thank you.